Welcome to Eagle Eye.
What a break from Manoa.
Interviewing your favorite USA Eagles around the globe.
Tony Limbaugh into the 22.
Now, here's your host, Bill Baker.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. I really appreciate it. When you get a moment, please like, subscribe, follow, and leave a review. Now, today, on this Eagle-Eyed interview, I have Utah Warriors' Paul Mullen, the Islander. Now, we talk about the upcoming MLR season, which kicks off this weekend, which I know all of us are really pumped about. And then we also go back to his youth. We talk about the Aran Islands of Ireland, where he's from. He loved it. He loved growing up there. And then we go into how he got into rugby at a teenage years and more. So, but full disclosure here first. I messed up. I had technical difficulties on my half. I even sent him the wrong date and the wrong link for the recording, and somehow Paul stuck with it, and we still are able to get this interview recorded. And it's a good one. I hope you enjoy it. But I do appreciate Paul for sticking with me with this one. But so that was a lot of fun trying to figure that out. Anyway, we do talk about that at the beginning. So here we go. Enjoy the interview.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, sorry. I just had to turn my headphones off and back on, and I guess that was the trick. I don't know.
I apologize. I gave you an old link I had for a different interview, and I don't know how I got you that old link, but I'm glad you were waiting there for me, though.
Oh, no worries at all. I was kind of confused myself there, because I called you. I left a voicemail there a couple of minutes ago because it was like Saturday, March 14th, and I was like, oh, I wonder, is it today the 13th or tomorrow the 14th? I was like, no worries, because it says it will talk at the bottom tomorrow, so it's all good. Are you in Massachusetts, or are you from Massachusetts?
Yeah, I'm just outside of Boston.
And whereabouts? I've a lot of family in Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah. So I'm just north of Boston, the North Shore, so a little town called Manchester-by-the-Sea.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so I have an uncle that lives in Gloucester.
Oh, okay, yeah, next door. That's great.
Yeah. Manchester, beautiful spot, yeah.
Wait. Well, as I was waiting for you, or waiting for it to happen, I got a call from Gloucester.
Yeah, that's me.
I'm thinking, who the hell is calling me from Gloucester? But
I'm busy.
Go figure. Oh, man. So how are you?
Yeah, good. Here in Salt Lake City. I was going to say sunny Salt Lake, but it's not sunny. It's snowy. So, yeah, can't complain. Just ready for the season to kick off now, and we'll see how it goes.
I know it's beautiful out there in Utah, and, of course, the Boston area. Our snow is gone, but it's sunny and maybe about 35 degrees right now, which, you know, I'll take the sun. It was nearly 70 yesterday or 2 days ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, we just have some snow coming in right now. I'm looking out the window, and I can't even see the mountains, which, I mean, I'm not used to seeing mountains. You know, I spent a while in Texas where it's just the only mountains I see was the skyscrapers in the city. But yeah, no, so it's quite amazing, you know. I mean, where I'm from at home, too, there's no mountains. So, these are definitely kind of eye-opening, yeah.
Oh, no mountains. There's no trees where you're from.
Yeah. There isn't much. We're a rock in the ocean.
When did you return to the States? Have you been here the whole time during the whole pandemic? Were you home at all?
No, so I was at home, yeah. So basically, when the season got cut, was it March? It must have been around this time last year.
Like this time last year, yeah.
Yeah, and then about a week later, I went home, and it was just mainly to help out, you know, with my kind of the family business at home, you know. And then somehow I got stuck at home for about 6 months, just with the travel bans and that kind of stuff. So I ended up going. The plan was to go home for 2 months, and I ended up spending 6 months at home. But for those 6 months, I was just working flat out, and then I got back in around last October. And kind of been in the States, kind of been here ever since, kind of thing. So since then, we moved from, my girlfriend was in Houston, and we just kind of moved everything from Houston up to Salt Lake City.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been difficult to make that trip back from Ireland, because I know Heck, a lot of the flights have been canceled. It's tough to get in and out of the country, or even to get into Ireland. So, I mean, was that just an ordeal just to get back over?
That took it was. I mean, I don't know. Is chaos the best way to describe it? I mean, just because nobody knew how to deal with it. And so I have a brother and a sister that are in college in America, and because they were considered students, they were, you know, able to say, listen, I have classes, I need to go back. So they went back, no problem. I was like, well, I have a professional athlete visa. And I was like, well, we don't have any games coming up, but I need to go back. And that just wasn't going to fly. So, I think actually when I was coming back, there was only like 40 people on the plane from Dublin to Chicago. Wow. So, I mean, but I think that you had to have some sort of an exemption to say that, you know, that I kind of need to get back. So at the time, there was meant to be a training camp in San Diego with the Eagles. However, that got cancelled, you know, COVID. I'm assuming it's due to COVID, yeah. I was kind of hoping that maybe they might drop me up, or, you know, I might kind of be able to wiggle my way into first class, but no, there wasn't a chance of that.
Yeah, well, you did pull out the professional athlete card, right? Do you know who I am?
No. I mean, you know, you're going through immigration there in Dublin, and you're kind of saying, yeah, you know, you play rugby. It's like, what? There's rugby in America? I was like, yeah. So, because I think I was, you know, I was probably one of the only people that wasn't a US citizen. It was actually funny, you know, I went to Texas A&M, and there's another guy from Texas A&M that went to Texas A&M on the same plane. I was just like, what are the odds? There's 40 people on the plane. There's one other guy that went to Texas A&M here. He actually lived in Dublin, but I think I was probably one of the only people that wasn't a US citizen on the plane, so I got pulled in for further screening or questioning or something like that, you know. So long story short, I made it back to the States. Yeah.
Paul, I want to know, so I've seen the videos, the stories, read the stories about you growing up in the Aran Islands, but I want to know a little more about the islands from you, if you don't mind. You know, which one did you grow up on? Was it Inishmore? Which island did you grow up on?
Yeah, so the Aran Islands is kind of, there's three islands, Inishmore, Inishman, Inishir. Inishmore being the largest, and that's the one I'm from, yeah.
And what, so you said when you were back home for a good 6 months, whatever, you did the family business. What was that?
Yeah, so my mom has a grocery store on the island. It's the only one on the island. So helped her there a bit. And then my dad has a bike rental. So, you know, when you kind of like, you want to go exploring the island, you know, it's a popular tourist spot. So in the summer, a lot of people, you know, go cycling, and I was just working there. And then, you know, I suppose if I wasn't kept busy, then I was kind of kept super busy. There's glamping on the island, and I was kind of, if you will, security there a few nights a week, which was interesting to say the least, you know. There's a lot of, you know, Ireland was in a lockdown for a long time, and then you have all these guys that, you know, that you can't go to, you know, usually they might go to Spain, but now because the lockdown's lifted and they can't go internationally, they're forced to stay within the country. And they've just all this energy and, you know, I suppose money kind of saved up, you know, because you couldn't spend it. And man, they had a great time because there'd be some nights there, there'd be people kind of out, you know, on the beach, just, you know, staying up till all hours. And my job was trying to keep them quiet, and it definitely wasn't easy. But it was great just to, you know, people were having so much fun. It was kind of nice to see, you know, because for a few months before that, the island was islanders only on the island.
If you ran into me in a pub in, say, Galway, and as this American tourist, and I say, oh, hey, you're from the islands, I'm going there now, what should I see? What should I do?
Well, so the first thing I tell you is I hope you're staying longer than one day, because, you know, for a long time there was a lot of people would just come up for the day, and there's quite a bit to see, you know, but they'd only get the main attraction, you know. So, I mean, I don't know what's that. That's like kind of going to Paris and seeing the Eiffel Tower and not seeing anything else. So when you come out there, Dún Éagas would be the main attraction, which is, an ancient fort on the side of a cliff. So the cliff is about, what, is it 300 feet? And you have this kind of, is it 2000 BC kind of fort there up there. So that was like, that would be the main attraction. But recently, what's also really popular is about 5 years ago, Red Bull, I don't know if you've ever heard of Red Bull cliff diving, but they came out of the island, and you have this like naturally shaped swimming pool, I suppose you could say. It's this big rectangle that's naturally carved out of the rock. And they would kind of, they'd done the Red Bull cliff diving out there. And since they'd done that, like hundreds of people are coming out there. It's like, listen, where is the wormhole? you know, I want to go there and jump in. I was like, wow, it's actually quite big. And it's, you know, it can be very wild. Well, definitely cold, yeah. And people that are over there and they see it as, oh, yeah, you know, Red Bull done it. You know, these guys are professional divers. You know, if they can do it, I can do it. And unfortunately, a lot of people actually get hurt doing it. But it's amazing to see. And a lot of people, you know, it's really cool. Just, I mean, it's almost a perfectly, you know, rectangle just swimming pool, just carving the rock. But so you'd see that. There's loads of different kind of, you know, small churches. And there's a lot of history on the island for such a small place. Yeah. There's a lot of history. But my kind of number one thing would be just to go out there and stay the night, because you're not going to see the whole lot in one day. And then once the last ferry leaves, I think that's the best time on the island, because that's when you get the real kind of vibe. Because when the first ferry comes, it's just, you know, even influx of tourists and a bit of chaos. You know, it's like, I want to go see the Ford, I want to go see the wormhole, and I need to get back before such and such a time. But once the last ferry leaves, everybody kind of goes into, I wouldn't say relaxation mode, but that's kind of what it feels like. You know, it's almost like, you know, okay, work is over now, relax. And that's when I find it the nicest time.
When I travel places, I may hit the normal touristy pubs, something like that, but I want to go off the beaten path. You know, I want to go to the more local hangouts. That's where I would go. You know, like you said, after the ferry leaves, things calm down. You know, as a local there, maybe it calms down for you also, and you can enjoy yourself. But, I mean, that seems the best experience. Am I right? Being around the locals?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, and that's why, you know, that's what I find anyway. And even from my kind of, from the opposite, you know, when I was up in Gloucester a couple of times, there's a guy up there that builds dories. And, you know, it's just like, he kind of gave me the lay of the land and told me a huge amount of kind of about the history and just about building dories. And I just find it fascinating. I feel like, you know, that you have the tourist thing, which, you know, you have to do a bit of the tourist thing, but it's really when you right. get the inside scoop from the locals, that's what I enjoy the most. And I suppose I like a bit of adventure and traveling as well. So I like to see as much as I can.
What was it like as a kid growing up on that island for you? You know, I know you what, did you leave the island for school, for schoolboy years, like 13 years old, something like that? So before that, though, what was it like growing up there?
Looking back now, I suppose it's a fantastic place to raise kids. Just for me, it was like, you know, it's a very safe spot. So you'd cycle to school, and then, you know, school is about a mile away. Cycle to school and then go to school. And then afterwards, you probably have either, you know, Gaelic football, which is, I'm sure you've heard, it's kind of traditional. It's a traditional Irish sport. And you know, you'd cycle to Gaelic football training, or you might be, you know, to running. There's kind of a running club. And then you'd cycle home. But, you know, in the summer, you've just so much freedom, so many things to do. And, I mean, you know, fishing and everything. Yeah, I think it's a, you know, now that I'm over here and I get to see a different perspective, I think it's a fantastic place to raise kids.
You didn't start playing rugby, though, until you left the island. So when you were a teenager. So that's, to me, that's amazing, right, because, to me, that's amazing because here in the States, you know, most don't start until college. Or until recently, it's been getting more popular at the schoolboy age and younger. But for someone in a rugby nation like Ireland, or even if they're in the Southern Hemisphere, it amazes me that someone starts so late and is able to do so well as you right now. So, you know, tell me about that. How did you get into the game at that age?
Yeah, well, I suppose firstly, the reason why I didn't play any rugby was there was no rugby kind of where I'm from on the island. It was, we had a Gaelic football team, and that's about it. And whether, you know, you kind of play Gaelic football or when you play Gaelic football, there wasn't really an option, you know. And it was only when I was 12, I went to boarding school down in Munster, which would be kind of the south of Ireland. And then it was the opposite there. It was like, listen, you play rugby or you play rugby, because, you know, there was no other options. And I was just kind of, I don't want to say thrown into the deep end, but yeah, I had no idea. You know, I knew you had to spin the ball and that kind of stuff, but as for the rules, I had no idea what my, you know, position specifics were and what I was meant to do. So after a while, I suppose, you know, I got the hang of it. And where I was in school, it was down in a place called Limerick. And Limerick is just like rugby in Limerick. It's like a religion. I mean, it's going to, you know, Thomond Park is there. And it's just, I don't even know, can I explain it? It's just, there's something really special about it. And somehow I kind of, maybe by being in that atmosphere, or being in, you know, I started to really like rugby and absolutely ended up loving it. So much so that probably probably too much, because in my final year in high school, my parents kind of said that I was focusing too much on rugby and not enough on my studies, and I was sent to a different school. So, but yeah, so I was 12 or 13 when I kind of was thrown in at the deep end with rugby.
And when you were thrown in, what positions were you playing?
Yeah, it was prop. Yeah, I mean, I was thrown in a prop, and sure, I mean, I hadn't a clue what I was doing. You know, it was like, you know, Gaelic football now would be, you'd be looking for space. It'd be a bit like soccer, you know, you know, if there's space out here, well, you know, let's say I'm over here, the space, send the ball out this way. And there was me as a prop, and sure, I was out in the wing, because I seen space, but sure, I had no clue what I was meant to be doing. I suppose trial and error, and kind of figured it out eventually.
Now, what was the step to get into the Munster Academy or the Munster U18s and that? How did you work your way into that?
So when you're playing, that's probably a good question, but when you're playing like with these schools in Munster, there's probably, you know, is there maybe 10 schools or so? A few more, like, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I suppose you're playing against each other, and I'd imagine you just, you know, you might get, say, hey, listen, there might be tryouts, next week or something like that, and kind of show up. And that's kind of how it went for me anyway. I was kind of, you know, I was like, listen, this Munster, I was under 18, kind of A trials, and showed up. And then we kind of, that was the Munster under 18, kind of A schools or whatever. And then the following year, then I got your trials for the Munster under 19s and then under 20s. Yeah, and then once the under 20s finished, I kind of hopped across the pond to America.
Now, why? Why did you leave at that point? Was there ever a thought in your mind? Were you playing at a high enough level where maybe you think, you know what, I could play for Ireland? I mean, was that even a thought? I mean, I don't know how. I mean, you at U20 Munster still is a pretty big deal, if you ask me. But is there even a connection there between that and the Ireland national team at that point?
Maybe I should say this. It wasn't my choice to go to America. It was back to kind of what my parents kind of saying. Like, neither of them played rugby, you know. So, I mean, there was no rugby where I'm from, and neither of them played rugby. They didn't know much about rugby. What they knew was just it was a contact sport, and that, you know, if you know one injury, and that could be your kind of your career over with. So they were like, listen, get a degree, and if you want, then you can go back and play rugby. And which was kind of easier said than done. So I, you know, being from, you know, an island surrounded by water, boats everywhere. I mean, that, I always wanted to go into something to do with the sea.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of why I ended up doing marine engineering down in Galveston, Texas. Yeah, so in A&M Galveston. So the kind of choice was, listen, you know, get a degree. And if I stayed in Ireland, you know, I definitely would have been playing rugby. And probably college, probably, you know, like everything else at the time, rugby was just, it's what I wanted to do. It's what I enjoyed. So college was like, why would I do that? But anyway, you know, if I stayed in Ireland, you know, the next kind of trajectory would have been to try and get a, you know, a sub-academy or academy contract with Munster. But I think after our last game with Munster in the 20s, I think it was maybe almost a month later, I was on the plane to America, yeah.
And how did you make your decision for Texas A&M? I'm assuming they have a pretty strong marine program.
Yeah. So a couple of, I suppose, friends or family friends, marine engineering, you know, it was kind of typically associated with oil and gas. And if you want to look at, you know, oil and gas, well, you know, Houston is kind of, I would say, you know, it's a big energy kind of an oil hub. So you have the Gulf of Mexico right there. So that's, I suppose, you know, there's a Massachusetts Academy too. My cousin went there, or Massachusetts Maritime Academy, and there's a few in California and Maine, yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I went from playing, you know, then I was playing, you know, men's Division III rugby, which was, I had a great time. I had a fantastic time. But just it was very different to the Munster 20s, to that much.
definitely a dip in skills level to the Division III USA club level. But no, I mean, it's that had to have been a nice way to, you know, make your move to the States too, because as you know, you find people that play rugby and all of a sudden you have instant friends. So that must have helped with your transition.
Oh, 100%. And like, to this day, that's why, you know, rugby, I think, is just, it's fantastic. Because, you know, there was me, you know, a young lad, like, from Ireland, just dropped here in the middle of, you know, Galveston, Texas. Don't know anybody. The only person I do know, or the nearest people I do know, are in Boston. And, you know, and when I was back in Ireland, you know, I was talking to some of the lads, the Munster lads, I was saying, yeah, well, you know, I'll be down in Texas, but I have a cousin in, or I have an uncle in Boston. And they're like, Paul, you understand that that's like, you know, being kind of from, you know, being in Ireland and having an uncle in Spain. I mean, that's like miles away. And I was like, geez, you know, they're right. And, but so it was really, you know, rugby was fantastic because, you know, here I am, you know, we have kind of nothing in common. But what we do have is rugby. And straight away, you know, the Thanksgiving holiday, and I had friends that brought me in for Thanksgiving, brought me in for Christmas. And it's just, you know, it's if it wasn't for rugby, who knows, I'd probably be, you know, in the dorm or whatever it was by myself, you know. So I think, but I think that's just for everybody. No matter what part of the world you go, if you play rugby, straight away you have something in common.
Yeah, and you know, it seems like what I've been reading a bit of your bio, you seem like a guy that can't sit still, because during this time playing club rugby, getting your master's, becoming a Texas rugby referee, are you someone that can sit still and do nothing for a little while, or no, you got to keep moving?
I don't know. I suppose, no, I don't like to sit still. I like to be involved in something all the time, yeah. Yeah, I suppose, yeah. And I like to see what's around. I mean, you know, the killer was, you know, we went through Amarillo. I mean, which Amarillo is like, it's a 7-hour drive, or is it even, maybe even a 9-hour drive from, you know, from Galveston. But, you know, we kind of done it in a gradual steps coming up, and we went through a place called Amarillo, but there's a canyon there, the Palo Duro Canyon. And it's absolutely incredible. And I was just almost kicking myself that I wish I had just tried to, you know, venture out a bit more in Texas by just, you know, because the only time you kind of travel in Texas would be with me was, you know, when you have a rugby game. And usually it's like, okay, we're going to San Antonio, we'll play a game and we'll head back. But I always found like the best times were when we, you know, went someplace and you ended up staying the night. And that's kind of back to what we talked about earlier. It's like you get to meet the locals, or, you know, the rugby lads will kind of give you, they show you around. And I just think America is so big and there's so much to see that I suppose I love to travel, and I don't, probably can't get enough of it.
My friend Peter, he's the pilot I mentioned earlier, he lives in Dublin, and we would joke with each other so much because I would tell him how we'd make a day trip to New York from Boston, which is 5 hours. He says, and back? Yeah, you know, he says, we make a 2-hour trip over to Sligo from Dublin. It's a day trip for us. It's not, I think that's a long trip for him. So he jokes about that. And we talked about rugby. It's like, when I played at Atlanta, we would have, you know, we'd make the trip down to Tampa or somewhere, or we'd get to Chicago. Chicago would be an overnighter. But he was just amazed at how far we'd have to go just for a regular day game, you know, have a few pints after the match and still make it back.
No, I think I was amazed too. My first, because you know, when I was in school in Ireland, I mean, you might drive an hour, you know, anything over an hour is a long way. And that's probably why, you know, logistically rugby in America, it's quite tough because, I mean, you know, not only are you giving up, it's not a case of giving up a couple of hours on a Saturday, it's you giving up your whole Saturday and maybe, you know, half a Sunday too. So like my first game in America was in Dallas, and I remember, like, you know, it was a 6-hour drive from Galveston, and I was like, wow, this is mad, you know, 6 hours up, play the game, and then 6 hours back.
I'm back.
And I'm like, this is madness, you know. I remember seeing the GPS at the time, you know, this was before you had the, you know, when you plug it onto your the windshield, and it was like, you know, it was a 200 miles to the next turn, and it wasn't even a turn, it was just like, keep left. And it's just, I mean, that blew my mind, you know. I suppose maybe just because I'm not from, you know, even in Ireland, that would be a long way, you know. So, but yeah.
So last question about Texas, and I want to talk MLR in a second here. But since your family is technically in the transportation business with the bike rentals, I took a bus ride from Galway up to Sligo. And previous to getting on the bus, I had a few pints. Well, if you get on a bus in the United States for 3 hours on a crazy back roads, there's usually a loo in the back of the bus. There was not a bathroom in the back of that bus for 3 hours. We get out of the bus in Sligo, and we pass our friends running, beeline to the restroom. Why are there no bathrooms on Ireland buses?
I suppose most people probably wouldn't be... I'd imagine most people probably wouldn't be traveling that far. I'd imagine that's a while ago, though, is it?
Yeah, well, a few years ago. 5 years or so. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't know, and that's
It's a cheap bus.
any and yeah. Yeah, that's probably it too. Yeah. And I hope it wasn't one of those, bus errand buses where it stopped in every little, not even little
It
town, but a
did.
little
It
signpost,
did.
Oh,
Yeah, I did. I
stop.
thought we
There's
could get out, but we couldn't. Yeah, it was horrible.
nothing worse. I mean, because it stops at every little bus stop in the country, and a journey that should take you maybe 2 hours ends up taking like 3.5, and it's just, those are the days.
All right, so Paul, let's talk about Major League Rugby. You made your move to Utah. You just signed a 1 year deal with Utah.
Three-year.
Oh, 3 year. Oh, excellent, excellent. 3 year
Yeah.
deal. So it's really no luck of getting you to come to the New England Free Jacks anytime soon. So,
I think the New England first home game is against the Warriors.
it is. We're going to talk about that in a second. There's going to be a blast. But so, in your experience in Major League Rugby right now, I mean, have you seen the level of play increase since you've got into the league?
I mean, sure. I mean, you just have to kind of look the, well, the standard play has definitely increased, and I think a lot of it is to do, well, there's more teams now as well, and then there's also like a lot of these kind of big signings, or a lot of these guys that have a lot of experience, like internationals have a lot of experience coming in. So I mean, it's great. I mean, I think it's great for all of us, because you either kind of you learn off them, and basically to be able to compete, you have to get better. But yeah, I think in the past few years, I mean, I'm just so excited to see where the MLR will be in, let's say in another 5 years or 10 years. I mean, I think it's going to be massive, and that's why it's just, granted, right now it's not huge, but like in the past, what, three? I mean, last year was hardly a year, but how far it's come. I mean, it's very exciting,
What went into your decision to sign with Utah?
What went in? Jeez. Well, so my girlfriend, she's an accountant, and Utah reached out and they're like, "Listen, would you be interested coming here?" And I was like, "Well, yeah." I mean, I said, the real thing is, because no matter where we're going, it's like, if I can get my girlfriend could have a job, that would probably be more than half the battle. And the next day, she had three job interviews, and so that was a big pro. But also, I mean, the it's a beautiful place, and I think, I mean, the coaching staff too was, Sean Pittman is a well, he's a head coach now, and then Sean Davies, which were both kind of hungry and mad to go. So it's I was like, yeah, let's give this a shot.
So you had a preseason match against Atlanta last week. How did it feel to get back out there? It's been a long time.
Yeah. I suppose the one killer about up here is the altitude. Not
Oh,
used to that.
yeah.
But I think the stadiums are like, there's a 4,750 feet, and usually, it's almost like you're carrying around a sandbag on your back. But hopefully it'll stand to us once we go down to, well, not sea level, but not 4,000 feet in the sky, So, but no, it's how was the game? It was great to get a run out against Atlanta. It was great. Obviously, wish we kind of won it, but hopefully next Saturday against Austin, we'll see how that
Your
goes.
first match. Yeah. So
Yeah.
talk about the team, camaraderie. What makes your team special?
Yeah, I mean, so it's a great bunch of guys here. A lot of kind of the is it Islanders? So I feel like maybe for that reason, I'm granted I'm from the Pacific Ocean, but I'm from the Atlantic Ocean. But no, a great bunch of guys. Really nice bunch of guys, I must say. Just hard work. A lot of the lads here have jobs during the day, and then so the trainings kind of would be at night. So it's tough going. Tough one for me, but I mean, these lads are really giving it everything, because working a day job and then having to go, So I mean, from that aspect, it's professional rugby, but it's tough going. So hopefully in the next few years, we'll be able to go fully professional. But yeah, and there's a lot of lads that are hungry. I mean, we're just hungry. And, a lot of it could be just because we haven't played a game in over a year, So hopefully we can hit the ground running now in Austin next week.
So you have fellow Eagle teammates, Mikey, Tayo, Olive. Who should we be looking out for as fans? Like, who on that team should we be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, well, I mean, it wouldn't be looking at me anyway. You know, I'm just a prop, so it's, it wouldn't be the most exciting player. But, you know, someone like Mikey Tao, I mean, look at Mikey. Whenever he gets the ball, it's just like, this is excitement, you know. Meanwhile, I'm just kind of there to scrum, line out, and if I carry a ball, it's fantastic. But maybe someday maybe I'd love to be as, you know, like, you know, Juki, but no, that won't be for another while. But no, Mikey's a top class player. And so there's a, we have a few couple internationals as well. We have Cleve, the guy from Namibia. He was at the Namibia World Cup. And then we have a German international as well.
So you mentioned first game next week. And then you have your first home match, you know, in front of fans, it sounds like, they announced a side-by-side, like 75% capacity that Utah's allowing. That's going to be exciting to play in front of some home fans. It's, again, been a year, really. You know, what's that going to mean to you and for the Utah fan base?
Oh, I think it's for, you know, for Utah, it'll be huge because last year they actually never had a home game. And then it got cut by COVID, kind of ruined it. So this is essentially the first home game in 2 years. So it's very exciting. And I think for the players, you know, we have a lot to just, you know, it's a big day. It's going to be huge, you know. So it's very exciting. Looking forward to that one.
Any particular teams looking forward to playing the most? I know you'll have some family up here, so when you get here April 3rd, maybe have some family come to the match.
That'd be nice. And you know, as we kind of mentioned, that'd be the first home game in New England, so that'll probably be a big day out there. But I suppose playing against you know. Other teams that I played in the past, so, you know, playing against the lads at San Diego and playing against Houston, that'll be interesting or exciting, you know. And then just playing against, you know, lads that I played with in the past, you know. So it's I'm just looking forward to this, get the season going, and hopefully that COVID doesn't play too much of an impact in it.
I don't know. I think it's just a great feeling, hopefully for you and other players, to be able to get on the road again, to get out there and knock the rust off your boots. And just to play full-time rugby. I mean, is this something you're geeked out about? You're excited about?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, just like some of the fitness training to me, does anybody enjoy fitness? You know, I certainly don't.
Right.
But just to be able to play a game again, it's just like, you know, because you're doing the fitness and it's just this just slog, you know. That's not the part you enjoy about rugby. You enjoy, you know, the matches and the atmosphere and, you know, and that kind of stuff. So I think we're all, like, everybody from the fans and the players, and I'm sure even the referees too, are just mad, coaches especially, just to get going again, because as you said, knock the rust off. And you know, I'm sure there'll be, you know, the first couple of games, I'm sure there could be a lot of, you know, let's say balls spilled around the place, but again it's, you know, it's the first time in a long time that guys have been playing rugby, so it's very exciting. And I just there's something about it, maybe because of COVID too, or, you know, we have sports is back, so it's great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Pretty much every Irishman I've become good friends with loves to sing. Is that you? Because there's a video of Marcel Brocky leading his team in a post-match win to an Adele song online right now. I'm thinking, I mean, I don't know, bring out a limerick or two or bring out a popular song. Is that you? Do you sing?
I can sing, but you and your I can't sing, but I like to think I can sing sometimes, you know. So if you're going to ask me to sing, no, it is, you know, you probably have no listeners after that. I'd love to be able to. I'd love to be, actually, you know, recently since COVID, actually, I picked up the tin whistle, and just to try, and the idea was that, you know, I don't know why, to be honest. But I suppose I'd love to play the guitar. Greg McWilliams, you know, when we at the USA setup, Greg McWilliams, fantastic on the guitar. And he always just says, oh, it's, you know, it's really easy. You know, it's just a couple of things. And like, yeah. But like, you know, it's just, you know, it's not easy to me. So what I was saying is, like, listen, if I can teach myself 20 songs on the tin whistle, then I can, you know, maybe I've proven to myself, yeah, I could, you know, it's worth investing in a guitar. But if I can't teach myself 20 songs on the whistle, there's no point in even, you know, looking at a guitar. So that's where I'm at, yeah.
We should be able to put together some kind of band between the Tin Whistle, Paul Asike on guitar, McWilliams on guitar. I'm sure there's some singers in the bunch. Come on, we got this. Let's do a USA Rugby band tour.
Paul Asike is a fantastic singer. A fantastic singer, yeah. Yeah, so, who knows? We'll see what the future holds.
So, Paul, what's just last thing for you? I know you're locked up for 3 years with Utah. You know, what's the immediate future look like for you? What are you looking forward to most? I mean, I'm sure pulling on an Eagles jersey is right up there on the top of your list. You know, what are you looking forward to right now?
Well, just getting back in the field. Getting back in the field would be number one, and just trying to, you know, just be the best I can for the Warriors. And then, you know, as you know, you mentioned the international stuff. I mean, any opportunity to pull on the Eagles jersey is an absolute that's an honor, you know. So, I mean, this, you know, I'm sure you've probably seen yourself. There's been a couple of rumors there pop out in the last couple of days about mm-hmm. what might be held over the summer. But again, it's rumors. So all I can do is be the best as I can for the Warriors, and then hopefully the rest will kind of take care of itself. So I mean, just getting back in the field now, and you know, scrums, rucks, and mauls, and you know, a few carries now would be absolutely delighted.
A few carries and maybe a few 20-meter breaks for a prop. I mean, can we love that when that happens?
Yeah.
All right, hey, Paul. Thanks for dialing in and joining me today. I really appreciate catching up with you. It's been an honor, you know, to meet you like this as well. Good luck this season, and in the time to come.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Appreciate it.